Hey, welcome into SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. It is Friday night, and it is time for 2 hours as we bring you the biggest and the best. I'm your host, Elissa Walker-Campbell. And before we get underway, hey, we've got to recognize one of our sponsors, and that is Innospec Oilfield Services, where chemistry matters. Seasoned chemical service veterans, longtime industry innovators. Check them out online at InnospecINC.com. We're going to open up our first segment. You know what? We're going to talk about one of my favorite things, and that is golf. We're going to tee it up and visit with our good friend of our program as we go inside the ropes, and that is Larry Miller, former PGA pro and author of his book, Ben Hogan's Secret Fundamental. Good evening, Larry.
Well, good evening, Alyssa. And, we're on the brink of a new golf season. It's exciting.
It is very exciting. And I tell you what, it was an exciting week because National Signing Day was on Wednesday, and players declared what college that they were going to attend. So a big congratulations to all the young men and women who will now play at the collegiate level and take their game higher. So I wanted to open up with this. I mean, what are some of your memories when you signed at Loyola of New Orleans?
Well, it was a very exciting time. I'd sure like to relive those days. And, I had four or five different scholarship offers, and some were full scholarships, full ride, and others were three quarters, and a couple were halves, and, you know, contingent on if you make the team and you're a starter and so forth. And I went to Loyola in New Orleans, and I opted for a full scholarship there. And the reason I did, two reasons. I got to stay in my hometown, which, you know, there are pros and cons, but the other thing was, at the time, Loyola had a really good golf program, and we played all the big schools in the major tournaments, and, you know, we played a home-and-home with LSU, for instance, when they had a great team. And so the competition was really good and stiff, and we had a great team, assembled guys from all over the country. I was the only one, you know, from the local area. But to do that, to sign that, you know, and it's exciting because the newspaper does a big article about you signing and turning pro, you know, and embarking on a college career, which for me was a stepping stone to playing the PGA Tour. That's the way I planned it and envisioned it all along.
Hey, we are inside the ropes with Larry Miller, PGA pro and author of his book, Ben Hogan's Secret Fundamental. We're going to step aside for a quick commercial break, and we will be rejoined with Larry Miller after this timeout.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Elissa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, welcome back. Hour number one, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. You can connect with us at Twitter, at eRadio Sports, and always go back and listen to each and every interview at podcastarena.com, and you can check out some of our other amazing shows here at our network. We're going to pick up where we left off with our conversation. That is Larry Miller as we are inside the ropes. And Larry, you know, before we went to commercial break, we were talking about National Signing Day. Of course, it took place on Wednesday. And when you signed with Loyola of New Orleans, and, you know, what an incredible memory that is for you. But talk to our listeners about who guided you, who helped you make that college decision. You had talked about that you had five other schools that had actively recruited you.
Well, I had the late Freddie Haas, who was a great tour player in the era of Ben Hogan and Byron Nelson. He was from New Orleans. He was one of my mentors. Freddie was a Ryder Cupper and played in 14 Masters and just had an illustrious career. He's the one that broke Byron Nelson's 11 tournament winning streak.
Wow.
When he won the Memphis Open. And so Freddie was, as I say, was a mentor to me, and I consulted him, and my dad had a big hand in what I was going to do. And, you know, it was kind of a deal where you sit down and you talk about the options and what might be best. And you know, you always, when you go back, you know, from 30,000 feet or 20 years later, you always say, gee, if I'd done that or if I'd done this, you know, but there's no, I don't believe in wasted time, and I don't believe in stuff like that. I think Wayne Dyer, an author, once said that where you are right at this moment, for you to be there, everything in your life had to happen just as it happened.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of the way I look at it. But anyway, they helped me make a decision. But it was primarily my decision. I really liked the idea of staying in town. and plus the fact that we played such a great schedule in so many tournaments at the time. Loyola used to have a great athletic program, great baseball, great basketball. In the subsequent years, they sort of scaled down their athletic program, but back then it was really top-notch. But I did have, of course, you know, help and mentors and teachers that guided me along the way.
We are Inside the Ropes. Larry Miller with us tonight, SB Nation Radio. So talk to us about what were your practice habits like in high school?
Well, they were very, very strenuous. I was a practicer. You know, some guys don't like to practice all that much. They like to play. I was a practicer. Standing on the range, I could stand there all day. The art of striking a golf ball and controlling it and perfecting that art in detail is very appealing to me, always has been. And I've always considered the driving ranges of America my, they're my research labs. They're my almost a cathedral.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, it's almost a meditative form for me to get out there and hit balls. And also, I believe that when you practice very prolonged periods of time like that, I think it enables you to get into the subtleties of your golf swing that you can't touch from just brief practice. So standing there for 3, 4, 5 hours, hitting 1,000 balls a day, which I did many, many days, you begin to get into the real subtleties of feeling your golf swing, and it's at that point that you can make those great adjustments. And so I've always been a voracious practicer, if you will, and kind of like Hogan, you know, who, of course, my book's about Hogan, and Tommy Bolt was one of my teachers, Hogan's student. But I was very much like Hogan when it came to practicing. I just loved to practice. And so when I teach juniors, promising young junior players, first question I ask, I've said this before, to the parent and to the student,
yeah,
is, do you love to practice? Does your child love to practice? If the answer is yes, they've got a great chance of becoming a really good player.
So where do you think that drive and that passion came to have those, you know, a deep type of practice like that? Where did that come from, Larry?
It's the love of creating golf shots. It's the love of the art of it. You know, golf's an art and a science. And my first sentence in,
yes,
my book, I call it a beautiful blend of art and science, a beautiful but baffling blend. But to me, the science and the art of it, but mainly the art of it, of creating golf shots on your own, of your own doing, and making that ball, you know, bend left to right or right to left or high or low, or spin or not spin and control the trajectory. To me, that's a real art form, and I just love that part of it. And so I could just be there all day creating these shots.
So how old were you when you started to engage in those deep type of practices? And you're talking about, because, you know, that takes a high level of commitment, and, you know, making that kind of commitment is not necessarily an easy thing these days with so many distractions out there when you're talking about a junior golfer.
You know, it didn't come at first. But what happened was, as you get better and you start realizing that you have the ability to control the golf ball that way, when you realize that and start doing it on a limited basis, it hooks you. You know, it hooks you, and it hooked me anyway. And but it did not come at first. At first, you know, I just practiced and liked to go out and play with my dad and his friends, and then later on with other young guys. But as I got better and better and improved, that's when I started loving, you know, the act of being there, hitting, you know, 500 to 1,000 balls a day. That used to be a common thing with me, is to hit 1,000 balls a day and play 18 holes. And I did that, you know, all during the summers when I was out of school. And after school, my high school even let me use a football field at PE to hit wedges and practice wedges, because I was the city junior champion. And so they let me do that at PE instead of doing,
wow,
what everybody else was doing. I'd go out to the football field by myself with a shag bag and hit wedges, you know, for an hour. It's just something that comes along as you get better and better. You start realizing that you can control the ball and you want to do it more and more.
Hey, Larry Miller, life member of the PGA of America and former PGA Tour player. He is the author of 4 books on golf and performance. Of course, Ben Hogan's Secret Fundamental. Check that out online. We've been talking about, you know, National Signing Day was on Wednesday. How do you think, Larry, the recruiting process, that it has changed since you were a player?
Oh, very much so. It's become big business, you know. I mean, it's they start recruiting at a much, much younger age and watching kids, you know, and got their eye on them. And, yeah, it's just like every other sport has become. It's evolved into a thing. And one of the reasons for that is that there are the numbers. It's a matter of numbers. There are so many good young players now that these colleges go out in early and get their eyes on a player, and they know that they can have their pick from just multitudes of young, talented players. And so they watch them as they develop, and they watch for things. You know, they watch for their talent, of course. They watch for their temperament. They watch for their attitude and their desire and their willingness to work and practice. So many things they look at. It's not just hitting the ball long and straight. They want kids that are going to be good teammates and hard workers and along with that talent, because there's thousands of them with talent. But then, you know, you got to separate the ones that have the temperament for it, the emotional makeup for it. That's a biggie. Emotional makeup in golf is a big, big thing.
Yes.
Because that's what enables you to play under pressure. Some people do not have the emotional makeup to handle the pressure. So that's a big thing. But anyway, so many factors involved. And they're watching the kids now from 13, 14 years old on.
Always so fascinating. A great conversation with Larry Miller to kick off our program tonight as we are inside the ropes with former PGA pro, and that is the great Larry Miller. Always a true pleasure. Larry, we look forward to another conversation next week, and I know all of our listeners, they're always looking forward to some of your tips. We'll catch up next week.
Yeah, get those long underwear out, golfers. Get ready. Fall's here and winter's here.
Absolutely.
But the spring's not far behind.
That's right. That's right. Hey, much more coming your way here at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show, NBA News.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, welcome back. SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I am Alyssa Walker-Campbell. Our segment being powered by Innospec Oilfield Services, where chemistry matters. Seasoned chemical service veterans, longtime industry innovators. Check them out online at InnospecINC.com. Well, tonight we opened up the program. We teed it up. We talked some little golf, and now we're going to shift gears, and it is time for some NBA news and notes. And we are so excited to have back with us NBA writer Brendan Bowers, who has just released his latest book, LeBron James versus the NBA, The Case for Basketball's Greatest Player. Good job. It's good to have you back on the show. Thank you so much, Brendan.
Hey, thank you so much. It's good to be back with you.
Okay, so before we highlight your brand new book, give us your takeaways on the Cavs season so far. It has been a slow and a very disappointing start. How concerned are you? I mean, they're 10th in the Eastern Conference.
Well, I think I look at this thing two ways. Like, overall, when you step back and look at it, there's really no way you can subtract Kyrie Irving from the roster and then be a better roster talent-wise the following year. It's just not possible. I know that they added Jay Crowder, Dwayne Wade, Isaiah Thomas will be coming back soon off an injury. But even when that happens, you know, they're not the same team and they're not as talented as they were last year. So I think they're going to struggle with that throughout the season. As far as right now being concerned, I'm not that concerned, only that this is like the oldest team in the league. They know that they're charged with, you know, beating the Warriors at the end of the year. It's a long season. And, you know, I don't really see them trying all that hard right now. Now, I mean, that's concerning of itself. I mean, you would like to see, you know, an NBA team try night in and night out. But as far as like what they could be, I don't think we've seen it yet. I don't think we know yet. And I also think they're going to need Isaiah Thomas to come back and be, you know, another guy that can knock down shots from the perimeter and help open things up for this team. So I really don't think we've seen, you know, what this team can be yet, but it certainly is, you know, troubling if you're a Cavs fan, you know, what you've watched thus far just in a vacuum.
Hey, Brendan Bowers, NBA writer, New York Times bestselling author, is with us tonight and the release of his new book. We're going to get into that, LeBron versus the NBA. And it's very interesting what you were just talking about, effort. And Kevin Love said back in October that, you know, effort was one of the Cavs' main issues. And you're right there in Akron. I mean, you're watching the team and you're around them. Do you agree?
Yeah, I definitely agree. I mean, that was, you know, I think they had a hard time turning it on last year, just flipping that switch at the end of the year. I think, you know, you need to play at that effort level, you know, for a sustained period of time. Now,
you don't necessarily need to do it yet for it to correlate into postseason success. But, you know, after the All-Star break, you know, you're going to need to see the Cavaliers playing harder, you know, than they did last year after the All-Star break if you're going to have a shot, you know, at the championship this year, because the roster's not as good as it was a year ago. So, I mean, effort being a problem is still an issue right now. It's the biggest reason why, you know, they got off to the slow start that they have. And it's something that they're going to have to correct if they want to, you know, go further this year than they did last year.
What has Jay Crowder shown you? Of course, we remember his time here in Dallas and then, of course, with the Celtics. I mean, always a very stout defensive player. And he was one of the very talented players that they acquired in that trade.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely been a nice piece. You know, it's hard to return equal value for Kyrie Irving, who looks like an all-NBA player right now. You know, so far with the Celtics leading them to the winning streak that they're on. But Jay Crowder, for what he is definitely a solid piece. He's been a great defender, you know, as advertised. You know, he's a guy that can knock down, you know, that three-pointer, especially from the corner, and slash and get involved and get to the basket a little bit. So he's been you know, a pleasant surprise. You know, you just kind of like to see him be able to, you know, help others defend well and elevate, you know, the whole team collectively on that side of the ball. But from what he's done so far, he's been effective.
Mm-hmm. Help us understand, as far as Derrick Rose, I mean, what is his role? And from what I understand, I mean, he really needs to be more of a playmaker. His play and production, it's been poor, so he's got to be better.
Yeah, I think it's tough for Derrick Rose because, I mean, like you said, on this team, he does need to be more of a playmaker, but he's not really a playmaker. And you know, what really is tough is the guys handling the basketball, you know, Derrick Rose, you know, specifically, you know, he can't knock down that three-point shot with consistency. That's something that Kyrie did, and that opened up so much. So when you look at Rose, he can't knock down the three, and he's not really built to be a facilitator. He's a slasher. They don't necessarily need that. So, I mean, it's been a tough fit for him so far. You hope that he could just, you know, stay healthy and work on that aspect of the game and, you know, eventually, you know, learn where his teammates want the basketball and kind of evolve this season into a playmaker. But that's not really what he's been throughout his career.
New York Times bestselling author Brendan Bauer is back with us, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. His latest release, Who is the Greatest of All Time? LeBron James versus the NBA. It is a compelling read. I can't wait to get into this. And, you know, since we talk about LeBron James, I mean, perhaps one of the best ever to play the game. Some say he is the best. What should he be held accountable for? And talk to us about, you know, what is he showing you in terms of his leadership?
Well, I don't know what more he could do thus far this season. I mean, he's, you know, the game he had, you know, the other night with 52 points. I mean, it was like a vintage LeBron night. He's doing this in year 15. You know, he's individually doing everything that he can. If there's a way that he could, you know, help Derrick Rose become more of a facilitator, I'm not sure what he can do to do that. I mean, if there's a way, you know, he could help you know, others, you know, defend better. I'm not sure. I do think, you know, sometimes, you know, while his play and his numbers have been solid, especially impressive for as late as he is in his career, sometimes his effort, you know, has lacked, and that permeates through the team, and that gets back to what we were talking about earlier. So I guess to answer your question, you know, being consistent with effort, you know, night in, night out, no matter who they're playing, would be where you would hold LeBron accountable for you know, for the start so far.
Okay, well, Brandon, let's talk about your new book, LeBron James versus the NBA: Who is the Greatest All Time? And so, just kind of break it down. I mean, it really does take an honest look on how LeBron James, how he stacks up against the NBA's all time greats.
Yeah, working with Toronto Books, they asked me to compare LeBron to you know, some of the greatest players of all time. So, in order to do that, I came up with a metric called legacy points. And what that consists of is you got 10 points for a championship, you got 7 points for an MVP award, and you got 3 points for an All-Star appearance. And I took that from the list of MVPs and ranked those guys. And, you know, what the way that it ended up shaking out, and I kind of talked about this in the book, kind of divided the NBA into two eras, before the three-point line and after. After the three-point line, was instituted in 1983, Michael Jordan is the player with the most legacy points. So, you know, LeBron has his work cut out for him, but you do kind of identify a path for how he could be, you know, considered the greatest of all time if, you know, he's able to get another championship. He's able to be a all-star for a few more seasons here and then possibly maybe even this year, you know, win an MVP award. So that's how we kind of compared and contrasted them, and it was a fun project to work on.
Okay, so legacy points. So how does LeBron compare to the best in league history?
Yeah, so right now LeBron's ninth. He's just ahead of Shaquille O'Neal. And actually, Michael Jordan is technically third, but first in the three-point era. Because the reason why I came up with them is you want to. It's hard to compare, you know, across generations. Obviously, when guys didn't play, but then also the game was so dramatically different. Like Bill Russell played, there was no 3-point line. When Bill Russell started jumping to defend shots, he was one of the first players in basketball history to leave his feet. Prior to that, you know, you were taught to stay on your feet to maintain good defensive position against a shooter or a driver. So the game's changed so much.
Yeah.
We tried to use those legacy points as like an equalizer. And LeBron, you know, enters this season, you know, ninth all time. And, you know, it's conceivable if he plays 5 to 6 more all-star caliber seasons that he does pass Michael Jordan by the time he retires.
LeBron James versus the NBA, the case for basketball's greatest player. We are going one-on-one with the author, and that is Brendan Bowers. And so talk to us about LeBron. I mean, how he has evolved throughout his career, both in and off the court, and, you know, what this ultimately means for his legacy.
Yeah, just kind of going back through his career, because the book we have, you know, 15 chapters on 15 legends that we profiled. And then there's also, you know, a number of different chapters like, you know, LeBron's commercials and things like that. But then also, you know, went through his career year by year. And the one thing about LeBron is he seemed to, like, answer that question or answer that critic, you know, like at every step of the way. You know, when he was coming out of high school, you know, the amount of hype was incredible. And just looking back on it and thinking about, you know, LeBron at 18, you know, with the amount of hype that he had coming out of high school and that, you know, he has, you know, arguably the best rookie performance in his debut game ever, followed by, you know, Rookie of the Year award. You know, and then, you know, as you kind of go further along, you know, he wasn't able to win a championship. Well, he won, you know, multiple titles. He wasn't able to knock down 3-point shots. Then, you know, he got his 3-point shot, you know, to be much better and better throughout the years. So it's just, you know, I think with LeBron is whatever, you know, challenge he's kind of put with or with whatever people say he can't do, you know, he's done it throughout his entire career.
Is LeBron James the greatest player in NBA history? In his book, LeBron James versus the NBA, author Brendan Bowers analyzes that question. It is more than a biography. This unique book establishes LeBron's prominent place in basketball history. Wow, another compelling read. Congratulations. You're amazing, Brendan. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Stick around. Much more coming your way right here, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Connect with us online at Twitter. We'd love to hear from all of our listeners at E Radio Sports, and we will be right back.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Okay, welcome back. SB Nation Radio and the Big E Sports Show. We are underway. So many storylines to dive into. And right now, we're going to head out to the Eastern Conference and talk about the Cleveland Cavaliers. We're delighted to welcome back. Oh, he is always a Big E favorite. That is Mitch Lawrence from Sirius XM NBA Radio. Hello, my friend.
How are you?
I'm doing great. Always so good to hear your voice. And first order of business, let's get after it, Mitch, and talk about the Cavs. They are 10th in the Eastern Conference, and last night they were here in Houston, and tomorrow they're going to be in Dallas. So, you know, and last week they had that tough stretch, 4 straight losses. Pinpoint the reason why they're having these early season struggles.
How long do we have? A couple hours?
Okay, bring it on.
Pinpoint, you know? I mean, it's one of those deals. They've got so many problems. I mean, look, statistically and on, just when you look at them with the eye test, their defense has been abysmal. They've never been a good defensive team. I mean, you're kidding yourself when people say, oh, they need to be a better defensive team. That's not part of their culture and mindset, but they've really been terrible this year. whether it's guarding the three-point line, you know, pick and rolls, whatever. They've had some problems with their roster, obviously. Alyssa, this is a team that lost its best big man in terms of defense in Tristan Thompson. He's been sidelined. If you look at their roster lineup, their lineup, guys like Derrick Rose and Dwayne Wade are not good defenders at this stage of their career. So defensively, you know, LeBron James and Ty Lue, they've got a lot of problems, and they get exposed a lot of nights.
Well, Mitch, you're exactly right, because they are at the bottom of the NBA in defensive efficiency. So I hear you saying, I mean, do they not have the personnel to be a good, solid defensive team?
I never thought they had great personnel. I mean, LeBron used to be a premier defender. He used to be able to guard five positions. Not anymore. I mean, I remember when he first came in the league, first couple of years, Alyssa, where he was guarding playmakers and point guards. He can guard anybody from the point guard position to the center position. Now, there are possessions you'll see in the playoffs where LeBron is still going to come up with a big steal or a big block, and he can be an elite defender. But you know how they treat the regular season. And in terms of their personnel, look, Kevin Love's always been a minus as a defender. They've got other guys who aren't very good. You know, Shumpert's one of their better wing defenders, but he doesn't see a lot of playing time at points. So it has to do with their personnel, but it also has to do with, you know, their mindset is they're going to outscore people. That's the, you know, we've seen that the last few years from the Cavaliers. They're a tremendous offensive team, and they seem to spend a lot more energy and a lot more effort when it comes to finding their shots rather than stopping other people. And that's just kind of their mindset, and that's their approach to the game. I mean, a lot of people are always talking about how, well, Cleveland is not going to be able to stop Golden State. Well, guess what? Nobody can stop Golden State. But Cleveland will have problems here in the East this year with the makeup of their team. Now, they did bring in Jay Crowder, who is going to, you know, that's an upgrade for their perimeter defense.
Yeah.
They got him, obviously, in the Isaiah Thomas trade. But when they get Isaiah Thomas back, he's one of the worst defenders in the sport. So, you know, he's a 5'9 point guard. He's going to have a bad hip, so... Yeah, they got a lot of problems, not just in terms of their roster, but in terms of their approach to the defensive end of the floor.
NBA columnist based in New York and host of SiriusXM NBA Radio. He is a contributor with Sporting News and Forbes. He does it all. The hardest working guy in the NBA, our friend Mitch Lawrence, back with us, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. So, Mitch, as we talk about the Cavs, I mean, how much do they miss Kyrie Irving, and what kind of defender was he?
Well, you know what? Kyrie Irving was always knocked for his defense, and that was like in the regular season, where, again, he was part of the Cleveland mentality. They didn't really put a lot of time and invest a lot of effort into defense in the regular season. But you saw in their runs to the finals with Kyrie in the last couple of years, he was a guy who could really play defense when it mattered, in May and June. And you know what? I don't think they'll miss him much in the regular season when it comes to defense, but playoff-wise, yeah, he come up with big steals. He came up with some blocks, I remember, against Steph Curry back in the day when he was playing. So they're going to miss him. But I think really where they're going to miss him more is, you know, he was one of these guys, one of the few players in the sport who offensively can basically get his shot anytime he wanted to at the end of shot clocks, at the end of games, under pressure situations. Kyrie Irving was a guy who basically was unguardable, one of probably the top two or three guys when it came to finishing plays around the basket for his size. And to me, that's going to be the big difference, because they really haven't replaced him. Isaiah Thomas isn't that type of player. He doesn't have the playoff resume. Dwayne Wade used to be, but he's 35 years old, so I don't know what he can give him. You know what? That's going to be a big problem for Cleveland, because, yes, they can still go to LeBron for end of shot clock, you know, big clutch shots, but when you need somebody to make something out of nothing, they don't have Kyrie Irving anymore. That's a big loss.
Well, the Cavs, they may miss Kyrie, but if you watched the game against the Lakers the other night, he was having a good time, wasn't he?
Well, of course he's having a good time, because he's leading. You know, he wanted to have his own team.
He wanted
to get out of the soap opera, the daily, you know, everything's a circus in Cleveland. He wanted to get out of from LeBron's shadow. I mean, these are things that he's being criticized for. But you know what? I think that type of stuff had worn on him and taken its toll. When you're number two to LeBron, and LeBron is in total command of everything in that organization, a lot more than just, you know, regular players, Alyssa, then that's sometimes a problem for a guy like Kyrie. So he felt like at 25 years old, it was time for him to make the move. And by the way, you could also argue the fact that he saw the handwriting on the wall. you know, there's a lot of speculation about where LeBron's going to be going and will he be leaving. And he probably will be leaving Cleveland after this season. I'm sure from Kyrie's standpoint, he was looking at it like, well, let me beat this guy out of town and go find a great situation, which he did in Boston because he's gone to one of the better organizations in the NBA.
Okay, the Cavs, 10, 11 games into the season. How much is LeBron counting on Dwayne Wade to be calling out his teammates? Because there was some discussion in terms of that they're not playing with max effort.
Yeah, well, yeah. You know, LeBron's going to work his stuff with everybody. And now he's got Dwayne Wade. And, he played with Dwayne Wade, we all know, in Miami, but they're a long way from those players. Now, LeBron is still an elite player. He's still probably the best player in the sport. Dwayne Wade, over the last couple of years since leaving Miami and playing, you know, when they played together in Miami, they went to four straight finals. They won back-to-back titles. That ended in 2014. We are now almost 4 years removed from that point. And Dwayne Wade has a lot more mileage on him, and he's not the same player that he was once when he was able to close out games. He was the best number when he was with LeBron. He was the best number two option probably in the sport. So, he's now coming off the bench. You know, the other problem in Cleveland, which we had to identify too, is that Ty Lue, for the first, 10, 11 games, how many different starting lineups did they have? There was no cohesion. There was no ability to put out the same guys, whether it was injury or just basically making changes to have Dwayne Wade come off the bench, then start, then go back to the bench. And he had Kevin Love playing at center. There's a lot of, there's no stability there. So I'd like to see the Cavaliers, the key for the Cavaliers, besides LeBron prodding them on social media or whatever, Alyssa, is that they have to get Isaiah Thomas healthy in the lineup and a set rotation and a set lineup, and then we're going to see a lot more about what they can do. They're going to be a great offensive team. I don't think there's any doubt as long as Isaiah Thomas can come back effective like he was in Boston. But obviously, defensively, they're still going to have their problems.
Isaiah Thomas not able to go, but you talked about Jay Crowder, Dwayne Wade, Derrick Rose, Jeff Green. I mean, these are all quality guys. Do you anticipate anything on the horizon that perhaps the Cavs might shake things up a bit? And what movement might take place? I mean, are there any players that they should trade for?
Yeah, I don't know what kind of moves they can make. I mean, the problem right now, when you have Derrick Rose, who's been the starter at point guard, and he's got more turnovers than assists.
Exactly.
And that's a bad deal. And he's not a very good playmaker. He's a scoring point guard, and that's what he's been throughout his career. He looks for a shot first, not a very good passer, and he's a high turnover guy. So that's a problem there. I think they're pretty much locked into their roster. They've got a lot of big names. You mentioned a few. They've got guys like Jeff Green on the bench and Channing Frye. And they've got some talent. There's no doubt about it. But I think for Cleveland, I think what they're going to try to do, and the smart move would be, get Isaiah Thomas in the lineup, see what you have there, see what your best rotations are. And then you have to make moves. Maybe you can, but I don't know what they can do. They've got to get Tristan Thompson back. That's a big part of their interior defense. Without him, they're kind of lost there. You always hear about Kevin Love being on the move, but I'm not going to buy that until that actually happens, because he's the type of big player who shoots threes who LeBron really likes to play with. So I think there will always be conjecture and talk about what Cleveland has to do, and LeBron will probably add to that too when he starts complaining about the roster. We'll see if that happens. He's done that in the past. But we've got a long way to go here before I think that happens.
Hey, Mitch Lawrence, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. He is with us tonight, host of Sirius XM NBA Radio. Talk to me about the Bucks. What are they showing you so far?
Well, Milwaukee has, one of the great young players in the sport, a real rising superstar, Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Yeah.
And they made a big move the other day by bringing in Eric Bledsoe. Now, Eric Bledsoe can give them exactly what they need at the defensive end and what they need at the offensive end. Defensively, he can be when he's engaged, and I think he will be. He came in from Phoenix. They have a terrible team over there, that franchise. There's a lot of dysfunction and chaos right now. And for him to get out of there and get to a playoff team, I think that will rejuvenate him. I think you'll see that he'll be a very good defender. He comes into a situation where the top couple of teams in the East that they're trying to chase down Milwaukee, you got Toronto with Kyle Lowry, you got Washington with John Wall. You've got Boston with Kyrie Irving, and anybody who's going to play in Cleveland is going to be a pretty good playmaker, a point guard. And Eric Bledsoe's addition to Milwaukee is going to help defend that spot. That's where they had a lot of problems, the Bucks, depending pick and rolls, and just having a guy who's a kind of a shutdown defender, which he can be. He's shown that in the past. And offensively, the Bucks don't play with any pace. They have a lot of problems with that, even though Antetokounmpo is one of the leading scorers and number one in the NBA. He's going to help that because he can get the ball up and down the court. So I think for Jason Kidd, Alyssa, I think this is a great move. I think this is a move that, look, all they gave up was a reserve big man and Greg Monroe and some draft picks for him. And the Bucks are trying to build a team around the Greek Freak. And this is, I think, the type of move that can go a long way for them, because when Eric Bledsoe puts his mind to it, you know, he had some problems in Phoenix, but when he puts his mind to it, he can be a very, very good lead point guard for a team like a playoff team like Milwaukee. And I think this could put them in the top four in the East.
Eric Bledsoe, how do you see him working with Jason Kidd?
Well, Jason Kidd, no, you know, the one thing about playing point guard for Jason Kidd is if Jason Kidd gives up on you, then you've got a problem. You know, you saw that with Michael Carter Williams.
Yeah.
You know, Jason Kidd, we all know his track record. We all know where he came from. He's one of the elite point guards in the history of the NBA. He always knew how to run a team. He'll be demanding on Eric Bledsoe, but I think he'll help Eric Bledsoe in a lot of ways. Now, Eric Bledsoe's had the, you know, he's played for other point guards or playmakers, backcourt people in the past, including Earl Watson. One of his other coaches, obviously, in Phoenix was Jeff Hornacek, who was more of an off-the-ball guy. But Jason Kidd is the type of coach, he demands a lot from his players. I think that it'll work with Eric Bledsoe. I think part of this is going to, you're going to see the fact that here's a guy who's been playing for a lottery team the last couple of years. To be able to go to a playoff team, I think he's going to buy in. I think he'll buy into what Jason Kidd wants him to do. And primarily it's going to be, look, you've got to be a facilitator for us, and you've got to be accepting of a role where you're going to be deferring to Giannis Antetokounmpo at points. And I think it should work. I think if it doesn't, that's a poor reflection on Eric Bledsoe.
Our NBA news and notes will continue with Mitch Lawrence from SiriusXM NBA Radio after this quick break.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, welcome back to our number one SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We're going to continue our NBA conversation with Mitch Lawrence, NBA columnist and host at SiriusXM NBA Radio. Hey, Jason Kidd, only 44 years of age. Do you like so far just how he has done, you know, coaching in the NBA and how he manages rosters?
Well, you know, it's funny. We all think that Milwaukee, especially I guess it was last year, the year before, they've had some ups and downs. They've underachieved at points where we thought they'd be better. You know, I covered Jason when he was a player. Great player, no doubt. He's a guy who led the Nets to two finals, which was startling when what he did for the Nets when they were based in New Jersey. In terms of as a coach, you know, he's had some good moments. He's had some bad moments. He had some very good moments in with the Nets, but he had some bad moments also, including his exit. He never has really great exits wherever he leaves places as a player or coach. But look, the Milwaukee ownership, which he's close to, Wesley Edens, Mark Lasry, these guys are very high on Jason Kidd. He thinks they think he can take them to, you know, deep in the playoffs. You know, we're going to see about that. He's still young. He's still learning. He's got a pretty good staff, and he's got some really good talent. So the pressure's on Jason Kidd to start producing and get Milwaukee, you know, beyond just a team that makes the playoffs and gets to the first round. They need to be a team that wins, you know, starts winning 50 games, starts getting deep in the playoffs. And, of course, he's got to help develop Giannis Antetokounmpo. That's the key thing, because when you have a player of his talent, his ability, you've got to be able to get the
right
most out of him, and we'll see if Jason Kidd's able to do that.
Hey, Mitch Lawrence, with us just about another minute, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Let's head out west. Talk to me about your takeaways from Lonzo Ball. What has he shown you? And weigh in on his little brother and that bad boy behavior over in China.
Well, you can't be shoplifting. You can't be shoplifting anywhere, especially a Louis Vuitton store. Because
unreal.
From what I've told, they've got heavy security. So that's an embarrassment for the family and for UCLA, mm-hmm. and I hope things work out for the best. In terms of his older brother and the Laker rookie, Lonzo Ball, look, here's a guy who we know is a wonderful playmaker. He sees the court. He has great vision. He's a kind of a step ahead of things, but he's an awful shooter. And we've seen that so far in his first handful of games. It's a small sample, but we all knew coming in he's got that weird shot that comes across his body. They're going to have to change that shot at some point. Maybe it'll be in the summer when they take it into the lab and they break it down, they get him better mechanics. He's been an awful shooter, but you know what? Defensively, the question was, could he you know, hold up against quicker guards? That remains to be seen because point guard position is tough in the NBA. But offensively, he's really got to get a better shot. But other than that, everybody loves the fact that it looks like he's got great playmaking instincts and great leadership abilities.
Hey, Mitch Lawrence has been with us. SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Check him out. Host of SiriusXM NBA Radio, an NBA columnist, a contributor with Sporting News and Forbes. He is amazing. Thank you, Mitch. Have a great weekend.
Okay, you too. Thanks. Thanks for having me on.
Of course. Much more coming your way. SB Nation Radio and the Big E Sports Show. Hour 2 up next.